From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Jason Burmis on today's News Talk, TNT.
Technology, the double-edged sword that can either empower or enslave humanity. Well, I've been talking about a lot of different technologies in the realm of what is known as transhumanism. And folks, I got to tell you, I am far from what would be called a Luddite. If you're not familiar with that term, it basically means anti-technology. I am so pro-technology, you can't believe it. I've got a lot of the newer gadgets, at least when I can get them at a pawn shop a couple years later. But I also see how technology, in a lot of respects, has been utilized to enslave humanity. Let's just talk about medicine for a moment. Now, for a very, very long time, medicine, in general, was a good thing for most people. I mean, we never brought it over the top. There was nothing really dealing with, for instance, somebody's mental health. A lot of the things that were developed were pain relievers, etc. But then more and more chronic illnesses came around, and all of a sudden we allowed advertisers to advertise their drugs on television and in magazines. Prior to that, I want to let people know, you know, that was between you and your doctor. I actually grew up in an analog time where I didn't watch a half-hour TV show and watch a rather large woman doing a line dance about Jardiance with 40 other people. And that is just one of the many drugs out there. So are these drugs really and truly empowering humanity? I mean, just look at the average lifespan of somebody during the 80s, 90s, etc. Often people were living well into their 80s, and it was in the low 80s that we were at our average lifespan, at least in this country. Well, that's the low 70s at this point. Meanwhile, we were promised, at least my generation was, that we were going to cure all of these diseases, cancer amongst them. Many of us would be living well into our hundreds and 20s. And believe it or not, there are technologies out there right now that are advertised as life extension. And there is a growing movement, one that's really open, of not only life extension, but age reversal. And that's very, very important to understand. This is bio-nanotech that in many cases is in fact programmable. And bio-nanotech was introduced large-scale style via the human population, guess when? For the very first time. The COVID-1984 nightmare. What say you, Jason? What are you talking about? Well, unbeknownst to most, when we're talking about the mRNA platform or even the vector platform that most took, people didn't realize that not only was it not a quote unquote traditional vaccination where you took the virus and annotated version, a less powerful version, and eventually made it on that. Instead, you now sequenced the virus. And once you sequenced the virus, you would print it up with other sequencing. Think CRISPR. In fact, you don't have to ask Jason Burmis. Time Magazine did an entire article about how these shots would be using CRISPR tech. Well, another thing you couldn't say is that this bio-nanotechnology was quote unquote gene therapy. That's exactly what this was, and it is a movement of transhumanism. Most people would have never just outwardly accepted literal shots that could change our genetics forever, but now, guess what? It has been streamlined and mainlined on a level never before seen via the planet. And it is no coincidence that it's not only the mRNA platform that we're now talking about. And guess what? All of this has been developed for decades via what? Not just the shadow government, but great research agencies that we've known for a very long time, and we accept their classifications, like the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, also BARDA, and then companies, great companies, like Moderna. And institutions, academia is in on it. The Institute Pasteur amongst them. They're all strategic mRNA collaborators. Oh yeah, I forgot. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Obviously, everybody knows that one. That's old news. But today, when we come back after this next quick break, we are going to talk about yet another platform that's making it out there, chromosome style. See, you can't have a biological reality of an XY chromosome anymore because we're going to mess with that too. This is TNT Radio. I hope you're giving us a follow on social media, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, Facebook, Instagram, Getter, Gab, you name it. Don't just give us a follow. Share the shows. Tell people where they can find them. And if you can, please consider making that donation. We'll be back with the headlines after this.
Connecting the dots, painting the bigger picture.
They always have great conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, according to a new study, scientists at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine have developed a new method to create human artificial chromosomes, or HACs for short. I love the name. That could revolutionize gene therapy and other biotechnology applications. Here with the story, joining me once again, is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
Hey, Jason, this is why I love you, man. I didn't even read it as hacks, but that makes sense. I read it just as the HACs or whatever they do, right? This is frightening stuff. This is literally, you were just talking about it. I mean, this is the crossroads of technocracy and transhumanism. It is indeed evil and part of a large scale plan. I hope you're sitting down for this one, but believe it or not, there are a group of shadowy folks who met at least multiple times, as recent as at a conference in Rio de Janeiro. But they hatched a scheme to take over all genetic material on Earth. So that's the wild, crazy conspiracy theory related to this. But leaving that besides, they're definitely playing God, Jason. We saw what they did with the gene jab therapy there, and now they want to create synthetic DNA. What could possibly go wrong? This is actually something they've been doing for a while now, for at least a quarter of a century, if I'm not mistaken. What we're dealing with these hacks, the human artificial chromosomes, they've been described as being capable of working inside, within, that's right, inside not just you, but inside your human cells on the cellular level, and it could power advanced gene therapies, because who doesn't want that? Me, including those that address some cancers, along with many laboratory applications, but there's been a technical obstacle, one or two or three or four, that have hindered their development. So now they've discovered a new safe and effective method for approaching this. Well, maybe not safe, but they do consider this to be effective. They literally said so. They described this as a significant breakthrough in the field that effectively bypasses a common stumbling block. Well, put on your reading glasses, pull out some paper and a pencil and a calculator, because we're going to get sciencey here. These artificial chromosomes are lab-made structures. They're designed to mimic, that's right, fake, the function of natural chromosomes. These are the packaged bundles of DNA found inside the cells of humans and every living organism on the planet. These synthetic constructs have the potential to serve as vehicles for delivering therapeutic genes or as tools for studying chromosome biology. The previous attempts, however, to create these things have been plagued with a major issue, namely the DNA segments used to build them often link together in unpredictable ways, you don't say, forming long tangled chains with rearranged sequences. It's hard to say these sentences together. So now this is where we have this study, which was published in Science, which describes the approach that these researchers have taken, the Penn Medicine team. It was led by one Dr. Ben Black. They sought to overcome this challenge by completely overhauling the approach to hack design and delivery. They went back to the drawing board, Jason. Dr. Black explained in a media release, quote, "The hack we built is very attractive for eventual deployment in biotechnology applications, for instance, where large-scale genetic engineering of cells is desired. A bonus is that they exist alongside natural chromosomes without having to alter the natural chromosomes in the cell," end quote. Yay. To test their idea, the scientists turned to a tried-and-true workhorse of molecular biology, yeast. They use the technique, which is called TAR, transformation-associated recombination cloning, TAR cloning. They use that to assemble a whopping 750 kilobase DNA construct in yeast cells. For context, that's approximately 25 times larger than the constructs used in previous hack studies. The construct contained DNA from both human and bacterial sources, as well as sequences to help seed the formation of the centromere. Here's where it gets fun. The next challenge was to deliver this hefty payload into human cells. Why wouldn't you? The team accomplished this by fusing the engineered yeast cells with a human cell line, a process that had been optimized in previous studies. Remarkably, happily, not so happily, this fusion approach proved to be much more efficient than the traditional method of directly transferring naked DNA into cells. They're all celebrating. They describe the results as stunning because not only did the engineered, synthetic, fake HACs form successfully, but they did so with much higher efficiency compared to standard methods. So they're all having a field day with this, Jason, but I don't like where we're going, and I'm sure you can give me a giant black pill that's going to help me not sleep tonight, but go ahead.
What do you mean? Booyah! I'm so glad that it worked. Look, bottom line is we're talking about chromosomes, right? And we're talking about genetic therapy. I would be all for something that could say, take somebody who has an extra chromosome and suffers from Down syndrome, and you find that out very early, and we genetically manipulate that so they don't have Down syndrome. That would be technology that empowers human beings. But when we talk about chromosomes in general, they dictate a biological reality. X, either you got a Y or you don't, everybody. XX, XY. Or if you have that third chromosome, like I said, you suffer that genetic disorder. This is really moving us into unzip genes, taking charge of baby making in the new millennium. Think of all the wonderful gender types that we could make specifically through this technology with a little nudge here and a little nudge there. It's designer babies, aka designer species, really taking humanity even further from what we are intended to be. Meanwhile, when we talk about the transhumanist aspect of this, that again has been implemented via a large scale with these shots to acclimate the populace to this tech, you have a certain amount of the populace that get to genetically experiment with all sorts of goodies across a wide range. And a lot of these people would what? Like to biologically live forever. And a lot of people think that it is this technology and messing with our genome and our DNA that will one day fulfill this promise. Hell, one of them is the president's son-in-law, the Kush, Jared Kushner, who literally went on television and said, well, you know, I'm 40 years old. I got to keep in shape. I think that my generation is either going to be the last to die or the first to live forever. And then when he was pressed on that later on, he made, oh, I was just kidding around. No, he was not kidding around. This is how billionaires think. This is a movement. And unfortunately, if this technology is even semi-successful, it's not going to be for guys like you and me, Adam.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah, we can all get excited for where science is going to take humanity, but it's not going to take humanity, as in all of us. It's just going to take the select few. It's clear from the beginning. All of this transhumanism stuff has been nothing but a quest by a small handful of D-bags, we'll just say, to live forever. And, I don't care who you are. We're not made to live forever. So I think I have faith in God, and I believe the Bible, and I have faith that these people will not succeed when they're trying to mess around with the basic building material that God created. We have no right to do that, and I think we're going to fail. I hope we'll fail, but in the meantime, we might see some really wild stuff, you know? I'm not going to lie. It reminds me of that movie Gattaca. I'm sure you've seen that one, but man, I remember when science fiction used to be a warning to not mess around and do certain things. That's where we're headed if you do this type of thing. You know, designer babies, what does the future look like? It's one that I don't want to be a part of personally.
Again, if this technology were utilized to empower humanity, in other words, when grandma was ready to go, and that was at 100 or 120, it wasn't a year or a year and a half of pain. That's the kind of technology I could get behind, but that's not the kind of technology we're talking about. And that technology is rolling through big tech. Just so you know, Google's got its own immortality division. It's called Calico, and they pray to the gods of Ray Kurzweil in an age of spiritual machines. Adam, a pleasure as always. We'll be kicking it with you tomorrow for two segments in this 2 hour broadcast. I am loving it here at TNT Radio. I hope you guys are loving it as well. Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern. And when we come back from this next break, we got another person I love. There's a whole lot of love going on at the network. It is Stuart J. Hooper. And I'm wondering if he's going to give me a bit of a different perspective than Larry Johnson did via what's going on in Ukraine, via Russia, and of course, what's going down in the Middle East. We'll be back with more TNT Radio after this.
TNT's Chris Smith.
I can tell you that Donald Trump is projected to win primaries in the states of Texas, Minnesota, Colorado, Virginia, Maine, Massachusetts, Arkansas, Alabama, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and North Carolina. And in a little bit of a turn up, the northeastern state of Vermont looks to have gone to his rival, his final rival, the former United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley. Now, Nikki Haley's team has said that she won't be speaking tonight. That has been construed by many of the reporters in that location as she's about to exit the race in the next 24 hours.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. If you're still wearing a cloth or surgical mask around in public, you're guilty of spreading COVID misinformation. It really is that simple. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we are with Stuart J. Hooper. I couldn't be happier. Stuart's somebody I've been talking to for a while. I highly respect his analysis. He comes from an academic perspective. And Stuart, earlier today, we were talking with Larry Johnson, obviously about the supply chain now with this Baltimore event, whether or not there's anything more or nefarious behind that, the Moscow Mall assault, where that's going to lead us in this Ukrainian conflict. And then, of course, what's going on in Gaza via Israel and Palestine. A lot to get to. So I'm going to kick it with the very same thing I kicked it with Larry. Let's talk about this thing in Baltimore. In your opinion, is there anything possibly more nefarious to this event? Or do you think that we're being actually told the truth by the mainstream media at this point?
Yeah, I have not looked at this one as closely as the other couple of events that we're going to talk about today, for sure. But when it comes to this, I mean, it does look like it may have just been a tragic accident. Accidents do happen. We got the footage that apparently shows a power cut on this boat, on the ship, I guess is probably a better term to use for it. A couple of power cuts, I think, and then it goes off course, and then bang, there it goes into the foundation of this bridge. The issue is, when you're dealing with ships of this size, you're dealing with untold weight, untold mass, untold kinetic force that you can't really just stop and turn on a dime. This isn't like a sports car or something. So once it goes off, I mean, it's going off and there's not much you can do about it. You're along for the ride. So I think we may have just had a very tragic accident. The problem, of course, though, is that the consequences of accidents like this can have huge knock-on effects, especially when you look at the current environment, the current inflation, the current problems with supply chain, which are definitely not still resolved. I'm still in a situation here in Oklahoma where you'll go to a grocery store week after week and there's still one or two items that are consistently never there. They're never on the shelf. They're always missing. The inflation has kind of stopped creeping up, but the prices haven't stopped coming or haven't started, sorry, coming down. So this can only add to the negative aspects of all of that. And apparently this port, this harbor in Baltimore, is really central for the auto industry, so getting cars into the United States. So if you're looking for a car, the auto industry has been in a complete mess really since COVID as well. If you needed to buy a car, it was often cheaper if you could find it to get a new car than a used car in many instances, because of the complete collapse of the supply chain, this complete mess. So this isn't going to add anything good to our current global economic situation, that's for sure.
And you know, you just talked about the car industry. That's something that is not really referred to enough when we are talking about inflation. If you want, you know, a name brand, large scale Ford or Dodge truck that's the newer model, you're talking about $70,000-$75,000. And that's before you get any of like the Escalade like bells and whistles. That's at least a 20, if not 30% hike of pre-COVID 1984. And that's not bread or milk or water. That's an automobile, Stuart. So again, if this does affect the auto industry, and it may, I hope that it doesn't further, like you said, escalate the price of the used market. That's the market a guy like Jason Burmes is in. Let's pay for it outright. Let's worry about the insurance and let's keep it up. That's almost out of the reach of so many Americans, especially those who have been engulfed by this debt culture. You know, that's another thing that is completely different. My grandparents always talked about saving money, and yet with my parents' generation, there was a shift to get credit cards, to build your credit score and pay that off, meanwhile not putting much aside. And those that did, well, I hate to tell you, but the value of what you've put aside at this point has been deflated through the inflation you just talked about, Stuart.
Yeah, absolutely. And you probably know of Dave Ramsey, right? The Dave Ramsey Show that does the financial stuff and all those sorts of videos on YouTube, the kind of evangelical Christian approach to finance. You hear the people that call up his show and they say, oh, I've got $50,000 in credit card debt. Like, what the hell do you mean you got $50,000 in credit card debt? How is that even possible? I don't even understand how it's even possible to run up a $50,000 credit card bill. That just doesn't even make sense on any conceivable level. And then, yeah, you look at the car market and 70 grand for a truck. I mean, it's insane. And I'm here in Oklahoma, of course, so this is the land of the truck. If you don't have a truck, you're nobody in Oklahoma. So you need the 70 grand truck if you want to be somebody in Oklahoma, apparently, because they're everywhere. But of course, you also have the opposite here too, right? You have the trucks that have been on the road for like 50 years. So there's a bit of both. But is interesting. It's a bit of a disaster, but we'll have to see what happens with it. It's definitely not looking good, that's for sure.
Absolutely not. And again, if this is an infrastructure issue, this also speaks to the crumbling infrastructure of the United States and the fact that we haven't. Look, I look at something like maglev trains, right? And that is a technology that could empower the United States like no other. And it's been around for absolute decades. I think that if you did something like Eisenhower did with the highway system, again, people could work at a place like Tulsa, Oklahoma, or Oklahoma City, and live in a completely different state that surrounded them, and that would be feasible. Yet we've never done that. Instead, we have bridges that if they're built anything like the one we just saw, America is in big trouble. Meanwhile, we're taking more and more tax money via things like the infrastructure bill, Stuart. This speaks to the inversion of reality that Americans live on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I've tweeted a few times over the past year, no more money for any foreign war ever until the US can go 12 months straight without a train derailment. We may also now have add bridge collapse to that as well. So unless the United States can go 12 months straight without a train derailment or a bridge collapsing, nobody else gets a penny for anything, period. That has to be the new standard, because the country is crumbling and it's falling apart. I've lived here now for 8.5 years. You're sold a vision of America, but then when you get here, right, it's clear that there are big problems and there are issues and things that need to be solved here, and they need to be solved immediately.
Absolutely. And, you know, I live in a nicer area here in the Quad Cities in Iowa. The roads are horrible. I was just out in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Those roads and that infrastructure left something to be desired. And these are just small level cities or mid suburban areas that really should have the type of upkeep, like you said, that we're sold on in the illusion of the American dream. We're going to take a quick break for the news headlines. When we come back, we're going to get into this Moscow mall massacre and so much more. It is TNT Radio. Give us a follow and we'll be back after this.
What time is it?
Now, TNT Radio News.
You know what time it is? Yeah.
Time to read some news.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Facebook developed a program known as In-App Action Panel, deployed from 2016 to mid-2019, to secretly obtain proprietary data from competitors like Snapchat, YouTube, and Amazon through cyberattacks, as revealed in newly unsealed court documents. A significant section of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Maryland collapsed into the Patapsco River after being struck by the Singapore-flagged container ship Dolly around 1:30 a.m.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Stuart J. Hooper is with us, and let's talk about this Moscow mall massacre. Now, actually, you know, it was at the Alex Jones show, and Jack Posobiec, who, you know, I'm not really a fan of his commentary. I do follow along. I've talked with him behind the scenes. I've even debated him at Bilderberg 2017 in Chantilly, Virginia. But he talked about the escalation of this war in Ukraine with Russia, and he talked about specifically terror attacks and the possibility of areas like malls. And lo and behold, this happens in, you know, the biggest city, the epicenter of Russia, Moscow. When I saw the videos of this mall up in flames, and then I saw the videos of these attackers, I knew right away that this not only was a bad thing, but could escalate things in the wrong direction. I also knew that there were going to be 25 different versions out there by the end of the day. As I talked about with Larry, there were those that flooded the internet with Putin did hint this to himself. This is a false flag. Obviously, the mainstream media went in the ISIS direction as ISIS took responsibility. Putin himself says, yes, it does look like ISIS involvement, but definitely a Ukrainian operation. And the United States, what, came out almost immediately within an hour of the attack and said, hey, it couldn't be Ukraine. And we know that Ukrainian and U.S. intelligence have been working some time in that region, well over a decade now, when you had that initial really coup d'etat in 2014. So I've said a mouthful. Stuart, what is your breakdown of this event, and what do you think happened?
Yeah, I mean, excellent breakdown. And I almost come at it from a similar broad approach. I'm at the stage where I think it's worth considering all of these potential culprits in this particular incident. So we can maybe go through these one by one. So we got four. We got ISIS, we got Russia, we got Ukraine, USA. Maybe you could combine Ukraine USA together. Let's go through all of these. ISIS. Could this just be ISIS? I think yes is the answer to that. It could just be ISIS. Why is that? Well, Russia has been intimately involved in the Islamic world for quite some time. It's invaded Afghanistan, was in Afghanistan for a decade throughout the 1980s. It's invaded Syria, and it's been intimately involved in destroying ISIS in Syria. So there is a legitimate reason for the extreme Islamic world to want to go after ISIS and want to target Moscow and want to target Russians in particular. Then when you look at who these guys are, where they came from, clearly low IQ, dupes, patsies, these are not the brightest bulbs on the Christmas tree, to say the least. These are the kind of people that are in a desperate situation, and they admitted that we did this for the money. Now, this also raises some interesting questions of, well, is it then even accurate to call these Islamic extremists if they were just doing it for the money, for purely economic reasons? But of course, if all of that is true, that is the last thing that the State Department wants to hear. The US State Department does not want to hear that people turn to terrorism because they are in poverty. That is the last thing they want to hear. But it's a reality, right? It's not just a bunch of crazy people that want to blow themselves up for no reason or want to go and do these attacks for no reason. People join terror groups for economic reasons. If you live in a country
and
that
Stuart,
has another...
let me just stop you really quickly, because when you look at the FBI in this country and their sell of all this domestic terror or Islamic terror in the United States, not 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, when one of these people is framed up, whether it be the people out in Newburgh or numerous others, they're usually in it for the money and to dupe the individual who is raining money upon them, AKA the FBI agent or asset. We saw this time and time and time again. And that is one of the things that these people do not want to admit, that yes, of course, money is a motivation because these people are in such extreme poverty. And again, if you believe the media reports on this one, I think it's important to talk about it. What do we have? 5 individuals or is it 4?
I think four, yeah.
4 individuals and at $5,000 a piece up front, they were paid half. That's a lot less than that truck we were talking about there, Stuart. And that sets a terrible precedent that this could be done anywhere in the world, essentially, if you found people this desperate via any ideology. So please continue.
Yeah, exactly right. I think it was 10 grand in total, 5 before, then 5 after. But again, on TV, you hear 1 million rubles. Well, wait a sec, what is that? About 10,000 US dollars, which again goes to show the level of desperation these people are in. If you're willing to go and shoot a bunch of people up for $10,000, you're clearly in a desperate economic situation. The question is then, where did that money come from? Who recruited these people and why? So that then leads down the road of our other potential suspects. Could that have come from ISIS? Yes. So it could have been a legitimate ISIS terrorist organization that was capable of funneling this money to these people. That's possible. But how do we know that these people were actually in contact with ISIS? I mean, we do have now this video that's been publicized of this... I think a GoPro camera that one of these guys was wearing, and they've published the video of with the music and the watermarks and all this sort of stuff, right? But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that it came from a terror group. I mean, it's easy to do stuff like that with video camera, with editing. I mean, you could do something like that. You could produce something like that in 10 minutes, no problem. So that's an issue. So if we don't know for sure where the footage came from, who uploaded it, where did the money come from, well, then we have to look to our other suspects. Russia, I think, could be a legitimate suspect in this. Does Putin perhaps have a history of false flags? Well, yes, the apartment bombings in Russia in the 1990s, this is what Putin rose to power on the back of. Oh no, look, we're under attack. Terrorism's everywhere. They're attacking apartment buildings. Vote for me. I will save you. I will protect you. And then Putin sweeps to power, and oh, here we are today.
And what you're referring to, again, is the FSB, formerly the KGB, ultimately the evidence reflecting that they were probably behind that.
Yeah, and I think as we just shift into these other suspects as well, let's just jump to the USA. The USA absolutely has a history of staging terror attacks. I mean, we have the Northwoods documents. We have the Gulf of Tonkin incident. I think these are the two that are indisputed, right? It's almost indisputable that Northwoods documents exist, that the so-called second attack at the Gulf of Tonkin never actually happened. And of course, lots of other events that you could look at for being false flags too. But those, I think, are the big two, really indisputable in a historical sense, that we actually have the internal government documents that, yeah, there wasn't a second attack on the ship in the Gulf of Tonkin, and that the Northwoods documents were real and they were produced, and they were the US government saying, hey, we should blow things up and blame it on Cuba, and then we can go and attack Cuba. So I think everyone needs a wake-up call. The people that want to jump on the it was Putin, it had to be Putin, and the people that want to jump on the no way, it had to be the CIA. All of these governments do not have your interests in mind. They are all looking out for themselves, and they are all capable of evil.
They are all dirty. They are all capable of lies, as proven by their past activities. We've got to take another commercial break. When we come back, final segment with Stuart J. Hooper here at TNT Radio. Back with more after this. Give us a follow. Consider a donation. TNT Radio.
JDRF's vision is to create a world without type 1 diabetes. The type 1 diabetes community is at the heart of everything JDRF does. We were founded by the type 1 diabetes community. In the main, we are governed by the type 1 diabetes community, we're energized by the type 1 community, and we're accountable to the type 1 diabetes community. It's on their behalf that we exist, and it's on their behalf that we must succeed. JDRF exists to rid the world of type 1 diabetes. It's easy to say, but it's hard to do. So for us, that means rallying all the resources and all the people and all the organisations required to make that a reality as quickly as possible. The world's best researchers, exciting innovative companies, and the passion of the type 1 diabetes community, then delivered through the health system so lives get better every day, day after day, until the day we find a cure. To everybody in the type 1 diabetes community, no matter your age or stage with the disease, whether you were diagnosed recently or a long time ago, we need you to know that we are here working on your behalf to deliver a world without type 1 diabetes as quickly as we can. Thank you to everybody who's supported JDRF in so many ways. You are making our vision of a world without type 1 diabetes possible.
I tell my son, I love you, every single day. Now, my dad has never said that to me. Not because he doesn't love me, but because culturally, it wasn't comfortable for him. Now that he's a grandfather, he says, I love you to my son every time he sees him. My advice to all the fathers out there, forget the cultural restrictions. They grow up way too fast for you to waste even a single precious moment.
You're with Jason Burmess on today's News Talk, TNT.
Stuart, we've gone over the usual suspects, who this could have been, and certainly you've had the projection of the propaganda purposes from all sides. Zelensky going out there making a video, Putin again claiming that he believes it to be ISIS with a bit of a Ukrainian twist, the Americans saying, can't be Ukraine under any circumstances. Where does this event lead us in the broader scale of this conflict? Larry Johnson, the ex-CIA officer and counterterrorism expert in the State Department, thinks that this is just simply going to be a loss for NATO and the United States, and eventually, in a short amount of time, he believes that Russia is just going to win this conflict. I see more of the possibility of a not a forever war, but a conflict that continues on. He doesn't seem to think it will matter much, even if Biden gets into office. Do you think there would be a difference if Trump gets into office? Where are we going with this thing?
Yeah, great question. And to just wrap up the discussion on the Moscow attack also, the fact that these guys were found in a car allegedly heading towards Ukraine, that doesn't necessarily mean that Ukraine has anything to do with this. And of course, the Russians are going to try to link something like this to Ukraine because it's in their interest to do that, just like it was in the US interest to link attacks like 9/11 to certain enemies that were relevant to them at the time that they wanted to target as well, right? So that's just kind of the reality of all of this. And when it comes to those guys in particular, again, we're talking very clearly low IQ, low capabilities, very amateur style attack. If you watch the video as well, they probably just ran out of that place, jumped in the car, and just drove down the road. They probably didn't even know where they were going as they were leaving this place. But why is this also dangerous? Because of the geopolitical situation that we find ourselves in right now. We have been sitting on the precipice of World War III for now over 2 years as a result of this war in Ukraine. And perhaps you could even take that back even further, really, to the start of all of this with the coup in 2014 in Ukraine, and how that was really the spark of this whole situation. Western backed, of course. But when you have something like this that occurs, when we're already in a situation that's so tense and so escalated and so dangerous and sitting on a knife's edge, this is the sort of thing that can tip it over the edge, which is why you have to pull the whole thing back from the brink. You need to wrap this war up, bring it to an end as quickly as possible. Because when you have things like this that happen, imagine, I think today we had Putin get up on TV and he made a statement that this was ISIS. ISIS did this. We now know that it was ISIS. Well, okay, great. What if Putin gets on TV today and he says, we know the CIA did this, and we know that they coordinated this attack with these people and they launched this, and we are now going to respond versus the United States? This is the danger when these things pop off. Putin could choose to use a situation like this in many different ways. So when you have it spring off like this, the more dangerous of a situation that you are already in, you're only just risking making it even worse. So I think we need to pull the whole thing back from the brink, because we're only one or two more of these situations, I think, away from a wider escalation, from a wider conflagration between the West and Russia. So again, regardless of who's responsible for things like this, when they happen in a hyper-tense situation, they might be used and abused by certain actors to fulfill their own agenda. So if Putin does want to go to war with the West and something like this happens, he can get up on TV and claim that it was the West and then go ahead and start some kind of conflict. The same, of course, could happen in the Western world. Something blows up, something happens. Who does the West blame? Well, whoever they want to blame, as we've seen time and time and time again, whether or not it's the right person or not. So yeah, that's where we are. That's why this is so dangerous, and ultimately why we need to pull ourselves back from the brink of destruction with Ukraine.
So let's shift to the Middle East really quickly. Right now, I don't know if I've ever seen just such modern, outright, we're killing civilians and it's okay because it's this new type of warfare. And a lot of people don't want to hear that. But for instance, one of the glaring examples of this is not only the drone footage, which is high definition footage of civilians being targeted and killed walking down the street that appears to have been leaked by an Israeli soldier with a conscience. Again, we don't know if it's leaked, but I don't know how else it gets out. No one's contested that it's real. The mainstream media in this country, you know, they want to report on the protests and this and that. They have reported on this. And then on top of that, inside the mainstream media, Wolf Blitzer, who I have been a huge critic of over the years and even met briefly in 2007 during the 2008 presidential run when he moderated one of the debates that I covered. He is on air with an Israeli official that openly said that they targeted and bombed a refugee center filled with civilians, men, women, and children, to kill a member of Hezbollah. And even Wolf was taken aback with this, and several times had to reiterate the fact that they knew that women, children, and other civilians were there. Is this just going to be a steamroll by the Israeli military? Are they going into Lebanon, as they have alluded to? And Larry Johnson said he believes that they will do this, but in the end, this will be disastrous for Israel because they will be defeated. Do you share that view?
Yeah, so when it comes to Israel and what they're doing here, I think they've had their jump the shark moment. They have well and truly gone off the rails militarily, politically. They have gone all in on this, and unfortunately, that bet has not paid off. So we had yesterday the UN Security Council passed the demand for an unconditional ceasefire. Nothing to do with releasing hostages or attacks and things like this, just a straight up, time to stop this, period, time to stop. And the United States even had to abstain from that vote. So they didn't vote, yes, we agree with the unconditional ceasefire. They just abstained, and then it passed. That is huge, however, for the US to do that. Israel, often called the 51st state. I, like you, are not one of the people that buys into this idea that Israel somehow controls the United States. This is the opposite way around. The Israeli government, this is a tool of the United States. Is not the other way around. So the US currently sees its tool going off the rails and putting itself into a very dangerous political, military, and even economic position. The Israeli economy is suffering tremendously as a result of all of this, because who wants to go on vacation to Israel right now? Nobody. Nobody at all. So all of that money that comes in from abroad is no longer coming in. There are these economic consequences, obviously, from that. They're going to have knock-on effects, business closures, job losses, you name it. And of course, the political side of all of this, what's going to happen with Netanyahu? Is he ever going to let go of power? When is the next election going to be? You got this government right now of both the left and the right coming together. So the political situation is completely up in the air. You got massive protests every weekend in Israel, trying to get the hostages back. Because, of course, imagine if you're one of these families that has hostages in Gaza, and all your government is doing is carpet bombing the region. Well, what does that mean for my mother, my father, my son, my daughter, whoever it is that's being kidnapped and being held in that region? Are you doing anything to get them back, or are you just bombing everything? Because then you might kill my relatives. So you can see why people might be a little bit unhappy about this approach. And yes, then we have to speak to this general overall military escalation with Lebanon. There have been attacks back and forth on the border since this started on a more regular base than normal. There have been larger scale strikes into Lebanon, also into the West Bank, and of course Gaza as well. So this has been blowing up everywhere. The question is, to what extent can the Israelis continue to do this? Well, as long as the Western world wants to keep funneling weapons into Israel is the ultimate answer to that question. And it doesn't seem like we've gotten there just yet. We have, again, a lot of grandstanding from politicians in the US Congress. I saw someone posted something about AOC the other day, and how she was, of course, up in arms and outraged about what's going on in Gaza, but then also voted for a budget that included an increase in military aid and the continuance of sending missiles to the Israelis, whether she knows it or not. I mean, either way, right? You've got kind of a problem going on there. You clearly are not in it for the right reasons, let's say, for AOC. I mean, and just briefly on her, if there was ever a kind of a useful idiot figure there. I mean, there's your one for the right, for the left, sorry, of course. If you think she's going to save you, you got problems, big time problems.
With AOC in particular, brother, a lot of people don't really understand how she was a complete and total manufactured, auditioned for politician. I mean, that's not me just like making it up. You think that DC is holly weird for ugly people, or nothing illustrates it more than AOC and Ilhan Omar, only they auditioned and got it because they were some of the pretty people. For those that don't know, these were people that had worked on limited campaigns. AOC, I believe, had worked with Jesse Jackson somewhere in the past, and they had literal interviews with who this PAC was going to support in that area. AOC was that person. She's about as manufactured a phony as it gets. So when you're talking out one side and you're voting the other, and basically you're both sides of the coin, that's her gig, Stuart.
Yeah, and she's faced protests now at the little town hall events that she's been holding, and she's used to going out there and everyone's waving and screaming and, oh, can I get a selfie? And it's all laughs and games and everyone's smiling and having fun. Well, now something real's happened and real people are coming and questioning her about what she's doing, and the mask has fallen well and truly off, to say the least. But yeah, in terms of the escalation and military side of all this, this is also a problem in the United Kingdom right now. We've got the Labour Party, which is supposed to be in opposition to the Conservatives. It took them forever to come out and call for a ceasefire. Now the Conservatives also are calling for a ceasefire. Only took around 30,000 dead people in Gaza for this to happen, which shows you the state of our politics in the Western world, and the fact that we have no real choice on any issues that matter. If you are really passionate about abortion or something, well, good for you, I guess, but it's a wedge issue. It's not something that's going to completely change the world. It's not going to completely change reality in one way or the other, unlike your money supply, the foreign policy, the wars, all of this sort of stuff. And on any of those big issues that really matter, you're talking about both parties selling us exactly the same line. And this has gone on for decades and decades and decades. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but back in 2015, I actually ran for parliament back in England. And I did it as an independent candidate because I'd looked at both the Labour Party and the Conservatives and said, these people are telling me the exact same thing on the wars, on the economy. Why would I vote for one of them? Because clearly you're not going to change anything. So it wasn't a real campaign or anything. It was more of just a personal political process. But yeah, that's, I think, honestly, where we need to go. So if we're looking for solutions here, we need to get outside of this two-party paradigm, this left-right paradigm. Wherever you're located in the world, I can almost guarantee you that you probably don't have a legitimate opposition if it's one of your big two mainstream parties.
That is the truth of the matter. Where are we going with all this? In other words, if we had a Moscow style event in the United States and it was blamed on a certain particular party, would that be the kind of black swan type event that maybe could forego the election or put Americans into a state of fear? Because that's what I'm really worried about, the cross-pollination of these global conflicts and the possibility of a large-scale war where some of that conflict may actually come to within our borders in the United States, Stuart.
Yeah, this is, again, is the very real fear. If something blows up in the United States, you're going to look at what the reaction is going to be to that, and it could be disastrous depending on the scale of the attack that you face. Today, in class with my students, we were discussing nuclear weapons, weapons of mass destruction, chemical weapons, biological weapons. And for them, they're all 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. They haven't even grown up really thinking about nuclear weapons at all as part of their reality. And they haven't really been too much involved in current political debates for a long time. The only really time that they've come up is with Iran every now and again and with North Korea every now and again. But you've never really had that threat of a massive global conflagration between two nuclear superpowers that could come together and destroy one another like we sit in right now. If there is, God forbid, a nuclear blast somewhere, I mean, anywhere on planet Earth, if you thought the COVID restrictions were bad and what happened with COVID, buckle up, because you're looking at like 1,000 times the change in global politics that you got from COVID. So again, this is the reason to resolve this conflict and do it as quickly as possible. In fact, both of them, in the Middle East and in Ukraine, both of them put us on the path of destruction between major nuclear armed superpowers. Does the US get involved on Israel's side with nuclear weapons if it looks like Israel's about to be lost by some coalition of Arab armies that are coming and attacking Israel? All of these scenarios are plausible and nothing should be off the table. But if there is something like if there's a new 9/11 even, something with conventional weapons in the United States, you're going to look at so many changes, it will be hard to fathom what's going on. You thought vaccine passports were bad? Get ready for iris scans to walk down the road, right? I mean, you're looking at the introduction of a massive police state structure unlike we've ever seen. So we need to pull back from the brink as quickly as possible, end these conflicts, and then if something terrible happens, at least it might not send us over the brink into World War II. We're probably more likely to be able to resolve it peacefully.
Stuart, my friend, I mean, you just look at Israel calling that October 7th event their 9/11 and what has happened there. That would be small scale if we saw something nuclear and global. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you guys for joining me, Jason Burmis, on my show here on TNT Radio. 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. Remember to me, it is not about left and right. It is always about right and wrong. I absolutely love you guys. And we'll see you on the flip side.